You're listening to Avasant on the Record, a podcast discussing key trends and insights into government-driven markets.
Hello and welcome to Avasant on the Record. My name is Sebastian Sobolev. I'm the Deputy Director of Avasant Analytics, and I'm joined by Matt Vallone, who is our Director of Research and Analysis. Our aim today is to try to put some of the emerging disclosures about the shape of the Trump administration's budget request into a little bit of context. We want to focus on what some of the numbers that will come out today are likely to mean and what they don't mean. Our understanding is that the federal agencies will receive initial guidance from the administration at noon today. A greater narrative will be likely provided during President Trump's address to the joint session of Congress tomorrow night. And the next milestone is a document that we anticipate will come out on 13 March that provides a little more detail about what the budget proposal may actually look like. This will result in a swirl of confusing numbers, and we'll try to make some sense of what you can expect to see, and then discuss a little bit how we envision the budget process playing out through the end of the year, and what we think the number will actually wind up being. So Matt, I think the first thing that bears mentioning here is, what does national defense mean?
So, I hate to say it depends is the first answer to the first question here, but it depends on sort of what you're looking at. But in the context of the budget, the broader case for sort of national defense spending encompasses more than just Department of Defense budget. Defense spending in the context of the budget will include spending on things like Department of Energy for nuclear weapons, include some military construction, which ends up going into a separate appropriation document from the DoD budget, and a handful of other sort of cats and dogs from different agencies that are associated with national security. So DoD will make up 95% of this spending, but it's not all of it.
And in this year, perhaps more than others, the non-defense portion, non-defense department portion of the spending on national defense is maybe a little weightier than other years by virtue of the fact that this may include things like the border wall that's been a Trump administration ambition for some time.
Sure. I think that the early reporting that we're hearing from places like the New York Times and from Politico is that there's going to be significant increases in spending beyond just the Defense Department. So DHS is something that people frequently mention, but also sort of broader law enforcement, which I assume to mean sort of Department of Justice, FBI type activities. So I think there's an argument to be made that this, particularly the wall part of this, will encompass more of that the sort of announced figure so far for an increase than it might in the overall budget context.
And that increase is the $54 billion, essentially, that was reported earlier this morning. So the takeaway there is a lower percentage of that than usual will go straight to the Department of Defense to accommodate some of these other priorities.
That would make sense to me. Again, until we actually see the numbers, it's probably best to hold off on making determinative statements because things have changed rapidly so far in this administration. But given the priority of the wall and the cost of the wall, it seems like that would take up a decent amount of that money.
Right. And the next question that I would ask is, $54 billion is a significant chunk of money, but perhaps the bigger variable is, what is that an increase over? There are probably two ways that could go. We can be talking about an increase over last year's request, which would be very significant in terms of percentage points, or we can be talking about an increase over current law, which is essentially the Budget Control Act. Do you have a sense of which way that's likely to break?
Well, I mean, from what we can tell from the call that OMB did this morning where they announced those figures, not a lot of details were provided, but my inclination is to lean more towards the side where this is an increase on the Budget Control Act figures. Increasing $54 billion above the FY18 number from last year's request would be a significant increase in total spending. I think last year's request, total DoD spending came in something in the ballpark of $617 billion for FY2018. $54 billion on top of that would exceed the budget caps by, I think, close to $80 or $90 billion. Should be a very, very difficult lift to get through Congress. $54 billion over the existing Budget Control Act caps put the number closer to $605, $610, that ballpark, which, while still difficult, because Congress has struggled repeatedly to pass appropriations, particularly for non-defense at these levels, is a little bit more reasonable to my mind.
And that, of course, sort of brings up potentially the most important actor here. I've grown accustomed to you saying that the Congress gets a vote in all things budget. That's certainly going to be true this year, but it's also going to coincide with sort of an unusual calendar for the budget process, generally speaking. So can you maybe walk us through what happens from here through maybe the end of the year and how things like the supplemental and indeed FY17 appropriations play a role?
Sure. Well, I'll do my best. This is a very complicated year. It's rather different from normal budget years, largely because of the fact that we still don't have any sort of certainty around spending on FY2017. Back in December, Congress passed a continuing resolution that provided level funding through the end of April, with the idea being that they would then pass some type of formal appropriations at the end of April. They still need to do so, or the government will shut down, but there are a couple of other things that make it more complicated than that, in that Republican leadership has tied FY17 budget activity to their plans for tax reform and their plans for repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. Because they've done so, they can't move on to consideration of the FY2018 measures until those issues are put to bed one way or the other. So, well, the April 28th deadline for funding is still in place. It wouldn't shock me to see that slip further if they feel like they need more time for tax reform and the Affordable Care Act. And all evidence is so far that those are going to be very difficult pieces of legislation to work through. That's going to postpone the budget process further. Normally, in the April sort of May period, you have the budget committees releasing budget resolutions, both chambers coming to agreement on a top line figure, and then providing the appropriations committee's directives on how much to spend on each of the 12 appropriation bills. That probably won't happen until May, and that's probably being generous. At which point, also, we may have a presidential budget request, assuming they get around to that in late April. From there, they only were going to have a very limited window to actually do the FY2018 appropriations. There are 12 different appropriation bills to pass. The last time all 12 passed was 1997, so not a great track record there. But what they'll need to do is both chambers will need to pass individual bills through their committees and out through the chambers. They'll have to have some type of conference, and they'll need to be adopted, the conference agreement will need to be adopted by both chambers prior to the end of September, which from the legislative calendar perspective is really daunting. They only have 12 legislative days in September, and while they've got a pretty heavy schedule through the end of July, they're off for the entire month of August. So it will be pretty complicated. They probably will go into September needing some type of continuing resolution just to keep working things out, even if they're making good progress. So as usual, it will be a delayed set of appropriations, but the exact extent of the delay is going to largely be dictated by how long we get stuck on this FY2017 material.
Right. And the other caveat worth making about the disclosures that we're likely to see today, tomorrow, and in the coming weeks is this issue of overseas contingency operations. Do you get the sense that the figures that we're going to see today are fundamentally a base budget proposition?
That would be my guess. I think that tracks pretty well with what we think spending is going to come in at, which is, again, in that sort of, I think our numbers came in around high 590 for base, but then another 50 to 55 billion for OCO. And so it would be hard to see them maintaining the current level of operations at a number that's it's in the 6.5, 6.10 range. So there's going to be some OCO on top of that. So I think that's probably not included in numbers that people are hearing now.
Got it. So you mentioned our forecast, and I do want to turn to that. But I guess if I understand our conversation correctly, the takeaways that we leave our listeners with in terms of what to make of today's news of a $54 billion increase for national security. First is that it's not all Department of Defense. It is other priorities. The wall is probably the largest among them. That it is likely an increase over the Budget Control Act levels rather than an increase over last year's request, because that's more politically tenable, and that it'll be sort of fraught through with a complicated legislative process likely to extend through the balance of this calendar year.
Yeah, I think all of that's fairly accurate, and it's important to realize that, you know, Congress has had issues with this for years now, and they've been getting worse, not better. We do have a little bit of a new paradigm with the Republican White House that may be able to sort of lean on conservatives in the House and Senate to get them to fall in line. But the general track record on Congress is not good in these sorts of the budget areas, and I would not be optimistic to have anything sort of cleanly sail through Congress in the near term.
Right, right. And that sort of takes us to our assessment of what we think will happen with the budget this year. My sense is that we have been projecting for some time a sort of middle-of-the-road growth scenario that falls above the Obama administration's FY17 budget, but well below, at least in the long term, the Senate Armed Services Committee proposal that came out a month or so ago. Can you talk about where you expect the FY18 number and beyond to land, and sort of what were the major assumptions that your team took into account in putting that together?
Well, I mean, a lot of things are the things that we've talked about so far in terms of the difficulty of the process and the timelines. But also, we had to make some assumptions as far as how you would get an increase done. Currently, the Budget Control Act is a law of the land through 2021. We don't believe that the White House or Congress is at all interested in getting spending down to that level. And in fact, they will push for an increase. The increase is going to be tempered by a few things, though. The first is that deficit hawks have a significant say both in the White House and in Congress. Former Congressman Mick Mulvaney is the director of the OMB. And he was, you know, a budget hawk when he was in the Congress. So he's going to want to do what he can to limit increases in spending, even for defense. Similarly, when you get into Congress, you've got conservative Republicans in the House Freedom Caucus that will want to limit government spending increases and reduce the deficit wherever possible. Again, they may be slightly cowed by a Republican president, but until we see evidence of that happening in votes, it's probably a bad assumption to think that they won't raise some type of ruckus if you try to increase defense spending too high. Lastly, you have congressional Democrats. In the House, they have much less say, but in the Senate, there are 48 of them. They're going to have some type of impact on this, on the appropriations process. While a budget resolution is not something that is subject to filibuster, the individual appropriation bills that actually provide the money are subject to a filibuster. So you'll need to get at least 8 Democrats to get in line with Republicans if you want to move things through the filibuster. And that includes raising the Budget Control Act caps. However, there are a lot of Democrats up for re-election in 2018 in states that Trump won, or in states where Trump did well. There are about 10 of them in states he won outright, and then Senator Angus King in Maine, where Trump won one electoral vote out of the 4 available in the state. It's entirely possible that when faced with the prospect of shutting the government down over increased defense spending, that moderate Democrats are going to balk. They're not going to sustain a filibuster heading into an election year next year. And so they'll side with Republicans to increase spending. Will that definitely happen? It's unclear. You know, we're a ways away from that. But there are lots of scenarios where you can see that happening. And that's sort of been our guiding assumption, is that through pluck or by luck, they're going to find a way to increase defense spending. But it's not going to be a Reagan-esque buildup that, you know, runs on for years and, you know, drive spending up through the roof. It's going to be a significant increase, somewhat in line with what we heard today, but it's not going to be a particularly sustained increase.
Right, right. So given the balance of primarily interests in the Congress, we're projecting that this will come out base only somewhere in the neighborhood of just south of $600 billion for this mm-hmm. year. Now that begs the question, you know, how will that money be disaggregated among MILPERS and O&M, and procurement and RDT&E. My sense is that we're likely not going to see detail of that kind today, tomorrow, or indeed in the 13 March skinny budget disclosure.
My impression from at least the reporting so far is that we're really going to be getting top-line figures for the various agencies and sort of spending categories, and very little detail into anything beneath that. So looking at accounts or something as low-level as program elements is just not going to be something that we see until late April or early May.
Yeah, indeed, which I think is why we have had to essentially do some of that forecasting ourselves in trying to figure out how an increase will be spent on particular programs and initiatives. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you anticipate will be funded first?
There are a handful of things, and when we were building the model, as you well know, we looked at. The first was that the costs of existing programs are almost always understated in the budget documentation. So there's going to be a lot of bills that need to be paid for these programs. For new starts, for RDT&E programs are more expensive than expected, just by virtue of the fact that the last year's budget underestimated the cost. So we looked at that as being a significant sort of where a lot of the money will go. Another thing that we looked at is that historically the department always likes to forecast lower O&M and milk purse costs than actually is what happens. So we assume that there'd be some type of growth in milk purse and O&M above what was forecast to account for this. That will choose to take up some of this money. The next sort of big area of things that we looked at was what were some of the priorities of the services based on a combination of sort of unfunded requirements from last year and then updated unfunded requirements that they've released for this year. And sort of broader plans. So the Navy's goal of a 308, or we assumed 355 ship Navy. So the additional spending on those types of platforms and programs was another part. And then lastly, we looked at some of the proposals from the Trump campaign itself. Unfortunately, there were not a ton of details available from that. It was about a page and a half on the web. But if you look at some of the source material from places like Heritage, they gave us a pretty good idea where to go in terms of increased Air Force size, increased Army size, and spending such as that. So that's roughly where we looked at for the main sort of categories of spending. And quite honestly, that fills up most of the available space that you're going to see. There may be a little bit of sort of opportunity space in the near term for new programs, but it's pretty minimal.
Mm-hmm. And the result of this is essentially a forecast that we now have through 2027 at the level of the program element. So we can talk about how many additional Virginia-class submarines mm-hmm. and what is the Stryker program going to look like.
Absolutely.
So on and so forth. And my understanding is that we'll be making that available online in the very near term for subscribers to have as an analytics. And we'd obviously love to see that serve a broader audience. So if you're interested in that forecast or you'd like to see what we've put together, our emails are going to be available right underneath this podcast when it's posted. Please don't hesitate to reach out.
Definitely. Always enjoy talking about this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Avasant on the Record. To learn more about Avasant, go to avasant.com or follow us on Twitter @Avasant.